"Sydney, Sydney," he said, as I walked up to where he was standing. He had my computer charger coiled neatly. I recognized my mom's handiwork at a glance in his hands.
"You were supposed to be here 45 minutes ago."
"I had something to do," I told him, reaching for the charger. He pulled it back just out of my reach.
"Funny. Julie didn't say anything about you having plans. Did she know?"
I felt my jaw clench. Inside, Jen was behind the counter, watching us. I needed to give a friend a ride to the hospital.
"Oh."
He still hadn't handed over my charger.
"Everybody okay?"
"Hope so. May I please have that now?" Finally, slowly, he relinquished it.
"You know, you're putting me in a bad spot again. Your mom's done a lot for me. I don't feel right lying to her."
"I'm not asking you to," I said.
"But if I do tell her about this," he continued, as if I hadn't spoken, "I have a feeling she'll tighten your restrictions even more. And I don't want to be responsible for that."
This time, I said nothing. I was trying to figure out what angle he was working.
"Let's say this," he continued. "We keep this between us, but you owe me one."
"You can tell her," I said. "I don't care."
"Nope," he held up his hands. "Don't want to be that guy. It's our secret. Agreed?"
I didn't like the sound of that, but before I could say anything, my phone buzzed. It was a message from Mac.
"Just a scare. Everything fine," he'd typed.
"I need to go in," I said to Ames, grabbing the door handle and pulling it open. "They're waiting for me."
"Sure thing," he replied cheerfully, stepping aside. "See you at dinner."
I walked into the lobby and behind the desk, dropping my bag at my feet. Jen, in the other chair, was watching Ames, now heading to his car.
"What was that all about?"
"Nothing," I told her. "Just him being his creepy self." She picked up a folder.
"I'm going to check in on the morons. You sure you're okay?"
I nodded, and then she was disappearing down the hallway. I picked up my phone to reply to Mac.
"Glad to hear it. Was worried."
"Don't be. All okay."
I looked outside where it was starting to get dark. Winter was coming. On my phone screen, these words remained awaiting a response. Or maybe not. All okay was a good stopping point after all, a place to stay while I could. As long as you stretched out a moment, it couldn't end. If I didn't write back, there'd be no further conversation, good or bad. I sat there for an hour. I never wrote anything. For a good 5 minutes, I kept thinking I was hearing crunching. Finally, I was sure.
"Are you eating something?"
Silence. Then, a beat later,
"Potato chips."
I was shocked. In the entire time I'd known him, I'd never seen Matt consume anything unhealthy. This was a guy whose typical lunch consisted of lean turkey rolled up with low-fat cheese, a handful of almonds, and 2 tangerines. It was hard to picture him eating anything with trans fats, much less from a vending machine. I couldn't even speak.
"Whatever you're thinking," he said finally, "I've already thought it, with paralyzing guilt added."
"Since when do you eat potato chips?"
"Birth, basically."
Another crunch.
"Until the March before last. After that, I was off them, like a junkie kicking dope."
"Until..."
"Yesterday?"
Crunch.
"I guess things are kind of getting to me."
Again, I wasn't sure what to say. Mac was naturally guarded.
It wasn't like he walked around bursting with sunshiny optimism on his best day.
Selfishly, though, now I was the one adding guilt. I worried it might have something to do with me.
What kind of things?
My mom, he replied.
A sigh. Then I heard what I was pretty sure was the sound of an empty chip bag being balled up.
Oh, dear. The showcase? And, you know, us?
Outside my room, someone walked down the hallway, slowing their steps as they approached. Instinctively, I looked at the door, at the precise spot where a lock would be if I'd had one. I lowered my voice.
Us?
Yeah,
he replied, his voice casual.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I'll take what I can get when it comes to seeing you. But the situation, it's not exactly ideal.
I felt myself smile. I know. I'm sorry.
Not your fault. It's Spence's.
He shifted, the phone muffled for a second.
I mean, it would have been bad for your mom to walk in and find us there, I'm sure. But not bad like this.
Layla said you were still mad.
She's right.
We were quiet a moment. I couldn't tell if whoever was in the hallway had moved on or was standing there, silent, on the other side of the door. A week into his stay, I'd known Ames to do both. I'd thought it was bad before, his being around. But the weird, long looks, the way his eyes followed me around the room, none of it compared to suddenly having him in the house. Though he'd arrived with only a suitcase, a duffel bag, a few boxes and a computer, he'd already managed to fill much of our shared living space. What began as a pack of cigarettes by the garage door became a damp U basketball towel I had to step over on our shared bathroom floor. That then morphed into the sound of talk radio flowing constantly from Peyton's speakers, right on the other side of my wall. Voices all day and into the night. I dreamed of round tables and panels when I wasn't having nightmares. Then there were the constant drop-ins. Did I have a spare tube of toothpaste? Where were the light bulbs kept? Did I feel like it was too warm up here, too? And that was just in the first 36 hours. It seemed like he was always passing by my door, peering in at me, stopping to chat while leaning against the doorframe. When I started shutting it regularly, he knocked, a soft three raps, one slow, two fast. If I opened it, he always came inside.
Serious cram time, huh?
He'd said to me the previous evening, as I was finishing up an essay for English on Wuthering Heights. I was at my desk, and he on my bed, flipping through a magazine I'd left open there. Normally, by this point, I'd have put on my pajamas, but I'd taken to doing that at the last minute.
I should have been more like you in high school. Could have avoided a lot of trouble.
As was my way, I responded to this with a single nod, pretending to be laser-focused on my closing paragraph.
Peyton used to say the same thing, he continued, turning another page. How you were so different from him, and he was glad of it.
It had always made me uncomfortable when he talked to me like this about my brother. For my mother, though, this had always been the main reason to keep him around, especially with Peyton's ongoing silence toward her. She'd tried to reach out every way she could since the debacle of the ceremony. Calling was impossible, so she wrote daily and enlisted the connections she'd established, the liaison, the family outreach officer, to pass her pleadings along. The only response she ever got was from Ames, whom my brother still contacted.
"He just needs some space,"
I'd heard him tell her in yet another of their coffee-fueled discussions at the kitchen table. "He'll reach out when he's ready."
"I just feel like if I could explain myself, he'd understand," my mom replied. "If only he would call you when I'm nearby, I might be able to talk him around."
"I want that too," Ames told her.
and it very well may happen. But for now, you've got to respect his wishes, you know? At this, my mom had only looked glum. It struck me as odd, since Ames was at the house constantly. He claimed to be on the job market, not that I saw him doing anything about it. That one of these many calls from Peyton, he reported, hadn't occurred with my mom nearby. Apparently, though, I was the only one to wonder about this. Now, with Mac on the other end of the line, I got up and walked to the door, opening it. The hallway was empty, but the door to my brother's room was ajar, light and the sound of talking spilling out from it. Looking the other way, I could just see my mom in the war room on her computer. "I'm hoping," I said, shutting the door again, "that all this good behavior might make my mom ease up a bit. I really want to go to the showcase."
"If I were you, I'd lower my expectations," he replied. "Maybe aim for, you know, getting to choose where you eat lunch once in a while."
"That will come too," I said, more confident than I felt. "But this is a special occasion, a one-time thing. It's an early show, and I'm doing everything I can to stockpile points.
I just don't want you to be disappointed if it doesn't happen," he said. "I mean, I want you there. You know that. But it's not everything."
That was just the issue. I knew not to expect everything. I never had. All I wanted was this thing. Even if it was a long shot, at least it gave me something to aim for during all those long afternoons at Kyger, or here in my room at night, staring at my unlocked door, with only my Saint Anything for welcome company. "Just think a good thought for me, okay?" I asked him. "And step away from the chips." He exhaled. I'd made him smile.
"I'll do my best."
When we hung up, I looked at the calendar I kept on my desk. On it were my school and work obligations, my personal stuff I kept on my phone, and I scanned the various items: SAT practice test, college night, Kyger payday. Then I picked up a pen, moved to the date of the showcase, and drew a circle around it, then another. I didn't write anything, as that did seem too confident, but just putting it in there made it seem possible. And anyway, I knew what it was. Chapter 22. My dad cleared his throat. Because I knew from experience this meant a subject change, announcement, or important remark was to follow, I gave him my full attention. So did my mom. Ames, however, kept eating.
"So, what's the latest on the job front?"
My mother picked up her wine glass, taking a sip. From the way she was watching my father, it was clear this query was not spontaneous. A discussion had preceded it. There was a plan here. Ames swallowed.
"I've got a few leads. One of my friends at the Walker has a call in to that New Valley Inn about a front desk position. It's really competitive, though, so I'm not sure of my chances."
"I'm sure there are other opportunities besides hospitality," my dad said. "I've seen a lot of help wanted signs lately."
"Maybe," Ames replied, picking up his water glass. "But I'd prefer to hold out for something in my field."
My parents exchanged a look. Then my dad said,
"A paycheck's a paycheck, though."
"True," Ames agreed. "But I have a feeling this Valley Inn thing is going to happen."
The silence that followed this was so awkward, I felt it in my stomach. Finally, something was shifting here. I just didn't know what it was yet. After dinner, I went up to my room and settled in at my desk, my phone nearby in case Mac had a few minutes between deliveries to talk. I was just starting my ecology homework when I heard someone come up the stairs. A beat, and then rap, rap, rap. I walked over, opening the door.
"Yeah?" "Question," he said,
stepping forward so I had no choice but to move out of the way and let him in.
Got a phone charger you can spare?
I can't find mine. Already he was sitting on my bed, grabbing one of my magazines off the bedside table. I pulled open my desk drawer, retrieving my charger, then held it out to him. Here. He flipped a page, then glanced up at me, but didn't reach for it.
Oh, great. Thanks.
I dropped it on the bed beside him, then went back to my desk. He didn't budge, even as I returned to my homework. Every minute or so, I'd hear him turn a page. My phone beeped, and I glanced at it. It was a text from Mac.
6 orders garlic knots, nothing else. Ideas?
I smiled.
Spaghetti dinner? Carb addicts meeting?
We'll let you know.
So, Ames said, what are you working on over there?
I put my phone down. Ecology.
Ugh.
He made a face.
Just the word sounds hard.
To this, I said nothing, going back to my work and hoping he'd take the hint. No luck. I was wondering if I'd actually have to ask him to leave when my mom came down the hallway.
Sydney, I forgot to mention that,
she was saying, but stopped suddenly when she spotted Ames on my bed.
Oh, I thought you were studying.
I am, I said.
I'm distracting her,
Ames said cheerfully, shutting the magazine. As the crease between my mom's eyes deepened, I knew I hadn't been wrong earlier at dinner. Whatever pull Ames had once had over her, it was waning, if not gone, altogether. And he didn't even know it.
Better let her get back to it, she said, her voice clipped. Okay?
Now he looked up.
Oh, sure.
My mom stepped back from the door, clearing the way for him to leave. A beat passed, though, then another, before he took the hint and got to his feet.
Thanks for the charger, he said to me, then squeezed my shoulder as he passed. You're the best.
I said nothing, my eyes on my mom as she watched him take his time leaving the room. As he passed her, he said,
You want some coffee? I'm thinking about making a pot.
No, I'm fine, she replied. I have work to do.
Okay,
he said, turning toward Peyton's room.
If you change your mind, just let me know.
My mom watched him walk away. When she looked at me, I went back to my book, quickly. You want this open or closed? She asked, nodding at the door. We looked at each other for a long moment. She gets it, I thought. Not all of it, but some. Finally. Finally. Closed, I said. She nodded and shut the door. The next afternoon, I was sitting behind the counter at Kiger listening to Jen lecture her morons about quadratic equations when Mac's truck pulled up right outside the door. I blinked, not quite believing my eyes. But when Layla climbed out and came in the door, I knew it was for real.
Is he here?
She asked. Her face was red, eyes swollen.
Spence?
I asked, although I knew. She nodded.
No.
She bit her lip, then pulled out her phone, handing it to me. There was a text exchange on the screen, first her asking if they could at least meet and talk. Then his reply.
Have tutoring. Sorry.
He dumped me,
she said. I looked up at her. Now she was outright crying.
Over the goddamn phone!
Oh, Layla, I said. Outside, Mac was still behind the wheel. As much as I wanted to see him, I always wanted to see him, I understood why he was keeping his distance. This was about her, not us.
I'm so sorry. That sucks. He's an asshole.
She wiped her eyes with the back of her hand, sniffling.
I knew something was going on. He was suddenly so busy, not replying to my messages. So I called today and asked him, flat out. He didn't even try to deny it.
She cleared her throat, sticking her phone back in her pocket.
I glanced out at Mac again. He was still looking in at us.
I don't know why this keeps happening to me. I'm a good person. I mean, I try to be, and...
You are, I said, standing up and walking around the counter.
All I want is someone decent,
she sniffled again, her eyes filling with tears.
You know, kind, good, like in all those love stories I'm such an expert on. It can't just be fiction. It can't. Those guys are out there. I know it. I just can't find them.
With this, her voice broke. I put my arms around her, pulling her in close, as she buried her head in my shoulder. I knew whatever I said right then she wouldn't hear. With that kind of pain, a deafness comes. But if she had been able to listen, I would have told her she was right. Those guys were out there. In fact, one was watching us right now, somewhere nearby, keeping his distance, knowing she needed me to herself right then, but still, just outside the door. I don't even see why you need me, Layla said glumly, as we sat on the hood of my car after school a couple of days later. I thought I was just helping with the demo. There was now less than 2 weeks until the showcase, and clearly Mac was not the only one getting nervous. Eric, high-strung even under the best of circumstances, had switched into maniacal preparation mode, demanding constant practice and focus. The fact that Mac had to work, Ford was more interested in getting high, and Layla's heart was broken, did not deter him.
That was the plan,
Eric told her, pacing in the short space between my car and the one beside it.
But their feedback was that they especially liked that song. We can't leave it out now.
I didn't sign on for anything public, though. I can barely even deal with my own face in the mirror right now.
I looked at Mac, who was leaning back on the bumper beside me. Although Layla had been freshly dumped when we first met at Seaside, this was my first time seeing this total loss of confidence. For such a bold girl, it was like she'd wilted. Only time, Mac said, would bring her back to us, although fries did help some. Now Eric walked over, putting his hands on her shoulders. I expected Layla to at least flinch, if not swat him away totally, but instead, she just looked to the side as he said,
You are going to be great. In fact, this might be just what you need.
To sing a song about a busted relationship in front of a huge crowd of people? She said. She sighed.
I don't think so.
To sing a song about strength and fierceness in the face of heartbreak in front of a huge crowd of people, he corrected her. Just trust me, okay?
She didn't look convinced, but she still didn't push him away either. And when he leaned forward, kissing the top of her head, she closed her eyes. I looked at Mac, then leaned close to his ear. What was that?
Temporary insanity, he replied into mine.
I told you, she's not herself.
What are you two whispering about over there? Layla demanded.
Nothing, Mac told her.
Me going to the showcase, I said at the same time.
Whoops.
She gave me a look, not amused. I'm going to ask my mom about it tonight. Wish me luck?
Good luck.
She pulled her knees up to her chest, turning her face into the sun.
Somebody's due some.
When I left Kyger later that afternoon and headed home for dinner, I was ready, with my proposal memorized and pre-crafted responses to all expected objections. Even if she said no, and I so hoped she wouldn't, she would have to be impressed with my prep work. When I came in the house, my mom was in the kitchen, stirring something on the stove. "What are you making?" I asked, putting my bag on a chair. "Pepper tempeh stir-fry," she replied, adding something to the pan that sizzled. There was a cookbook open on her left. I figured it was time to try some new recipes, shake things up. "Really?" I said. "Any particular reason?"
"No."
A handful of green things hit the pan. A beat later, I smelled onions. "Just in the mood to make some changes." This was either the best moment or the worst. Since I was feeling optimistic, I said, "Actually, I kind of wanted to talk to you about something related to that." She poked at the pan, steam rising. "Related to changes, or discussions about them." A pause, more sizzling. Then, "I'm listening." "Okay." I took in a breath. "So, I know I screwed up having my friends here that night, and Layla's boyfriend drinking. You were drinking, as I remember." One sip, I thought, then reminded myself to stay focused. "Right. What I did was wrong. But since then, I feel like I've done everything you and Dad have asked me to. The study group at lunch, Kiger anytime I'm not at school, then homework here afterward. I haven't been anywhere else, nor have I asked to do so." She still had her back to me, so I couldn't see how I was doing. I took it as promising, however, when she said, "I'm with you so far." Headlights were turning into our driveway, which meant either my dad or Ames would be walking in soon. One-on-one was better. I needed to keep going. My friend's van got a spot in a showcase. The winner gets a real demo from an actual label. The show's early, at 7, next Friday, all ages. I really want to go. She lowered the heat on the burner and put the spoon down. Then she turned and looked at me. "These are the same friends who were here?" I nodded. "Yes." "Oh, Sydney," she sighed, running a hand through her hair. "I wish you would have asked about anything else." My heart sank. "But this is what I want. To go to a club with people that I know drink?" "It was just Layla's boyfriend. They're not together anymore." "That's not the point," she replied. "What you're asking is a big leap for your father and me. We'd prefer to return your privileges gradually based on how things go." Which was just what Mac had said. "It's just one night," I said, not ready to cave yet. "Then we can go right back to how it is now." "You say that like it's a bad thing. You've been doing very well lately." She turned back to the stove. "To be honest, I'm hesitant to change anything." "You just said you were in the mood for it, though." She laughed. "I was talking about dinner." The garage door was creaking open now. I had a minute, maybe two, before I was facing a united front. "Please, just think about it. That's all I'm asking. Not a no, not yet, please." I'd laid out my case, presented points to her counterpoints. There was nothing else I could do but ask and hope that the luck Layla had talked about might find me. "All right," she said, as the door from the garage opened. "I'll think about it. Now will you please get me the curry powder and the cumin from the cupboard? My sauce is thickening." I walked over, taking down the bottles she needed and bringing them to her. The contents of the large frying pan looked unlike anything she'd ever prepared before. I didn't even know what tempeh was, but it didn't seem very appetizing.
I kept that thought to myself, however, as I handed her the spices. She squinted at the open cookbook, then twisted the top off the cumin. "Here goes nothing," she said, shaking some in. More steam rose up, followed by another blast as the curry powder hit. She poked at the vegetables with her spoon, folding them over once, then again. "What do you think?" "It's a change." "That it is." She tossed in some more cumin, then leaned in close, taking a long sniff, then gestured for me to do the same. Hesitantly, I did. It didn't smell bad or good. Just new. Different. Chapter 23. It was Saturday morning and I was just getting out of the shower. The first voice I heard when I opened the bathroom door was Ames's. "Julie, got a minute?" He stepped out into the hallway, his phone in his hand. Instinctively, I pulled my towel more tightly around me. "Not really," my mom called back from the war room. "I'm kind of in the middle of something."
"I have a feeling you're not going to mind this particular interruption."
He smiled at me broadly as he walked to her open doorway. Then he held the phone out to her. I had to give the guy credit. Presented with the possibility of being evicted from our house and daily life, he'd worked the only miracle he was capable of. I knew it the minute she said hello.
"Peyton,"
he mouthed at me anyway, still smiling. Suddenly, my mom was breathless, laughing, her words coming quickly and close together. Even from another room, I could feel her mood brighten, picture her face, flushed and happy. Just like that, everything changes. But not completely. Despite the fact that they talked for a full half hour, my mom not budging once from the war room, as if taking a single step might break this spell. Peyton wanted to take things slowly. When she asked if she could visit, he told her no, not yet. The phone was all he was ready for. Later, I wondered how Ames had talked him around, what he'd said to break this stalemate. If mothers could lift cars off their babies when necessary, it made sense that a person could go even further for their own self-preservation. I'd gotten so used to Peyton's not calling that I was actually surprised when the phone rang one afternoon a couple of days later. After the recorded voice finished, I took a breath. "Hey," I said. "Long time." There was a pause. I heard voices in the background.
"Yeah. Things got kind of tense. It had nothing to do with you."
Now I was quiet for a moment. Then I said, "It's been tense here, too. Mom busted me with my friends over, and I was drinking. She freaked and has had me on lockdown since."
"What? You were drinking?"
He sounded so surprised, outright shocked, that I wondered if he'd actually forgotten where he was calling from. "It was a sip," I told him. "And, Sydney, don't get caught up in that stuff. You're way too smart." "It was a sip," I said again. And she basically took everything away from me. It's not fair. In the silence that followed, I realized that this was the closest I'd come to telling Peyton how I felt about what he'd done and how it affected all of us. Immediately, I felt I should backtrack. Cover my steps. Like it was too much, too soon, but at the same time, long overdue. I opened my mouth, but then he was talking.
"You're right," he said. A pause. "It's not fair. It sucks. I'm so sorry."
I was not prepared for what I would feel, hearing these three words. All this time I'd wanted something just like this from Peyton, but now that I had it, it kind of broke my heart.
"It's all right," I told him,
and that was how we left it. All right, or the closest we could get. Still, I'd replay this conversation in my head again and again, trying to get used to how it made me feel. Like my Saint Anything, it was a comfort I hadn't known I needed until it was finally in my grasp. As the days passed and my mom's mood steadily improved, I let myself get a little hopeful. The showcase was so close, and her being again distracted by Peyton could only work in my favor. I was biding my time before I mentioned it again. I went to school, to Kiger, and to my room, hoping my good behavior was noticed. The times I did have with Mac, plus the promise of more to come, were the only thing that got me through. From the minute I saw him before the first bell, to the last kiss as I got into my car to leave for Kiger, the day was just better. A couple times he called me up when the band gathered in the outbuilding behind his house so I could listen in while Brilliant or Catastrophic, the official name, for now anyway, practiced. I'd put my phone on speaker next to me as I sat at Kiger or in my room at my desk. Listening, I'd imagine the scene. Eric posturing at the microphone, Ford in his typical daze, Mac keeping the beat behind them. There were the sudden stops and starts, occasional blasts of feedback, and routine disagreements. Each time Layla sang, though, I got chills. I could only imagine what it would be like to hear her at Bendo in person, if I got to go. When he wasn't at practice, Mac was working. If he had deliveries near my neighborhood, he'd swing by Kiger just long enough for me to catch a glimpse and say hello. More often, though, we were texting. That Tuesday, I was shutting down my computer at Kiger when he wrote this. Just had a weird delivery. This was different, as he normally started with the order, daring me to guess who'd placed it. What was it? Large pepperoni, garlic knots. Even I knew this was the most generic of tickets. It could be anyone, or everyone. I was about to text back that I needed more details when the phone pinged again. I think it was that kid. I raised my eyebrows, confused. What kid? A pause. Jen came out of the conference room, shutting the hallway light off behind her.
You ready to get out of here?
Yeah, I said. 1 second.
Ibarra?
I stared at this word, the letters at first not coming together. Like when you've looked at something so much, it starts to feel like a different language. Jen was by the door now, pulling her backpack over one shoulder. I came from behind the counter, following her out. Then stood there as she typed in the security code and locked the door behind us.
See you tomorrow? She asked me.
I nodded, and she started across the lot toward her car. As I walked to mine, I pulled up Mac's name from the top of my favorites and hit call.
How did you know it was him? I asked as soon as he picked up.
I didn't. Not at first,
he replied. Clearly, he was not surprised I'd skipped a hello.
I've actually delivered there before. It's a ranch over off Pike Avenue.
Of course I knew.
Yeah.
He was driving. I could hear his turn signal clicking.
For some reason, today I put it together. He's a nice kid.
Of course he was. And now, even though I'd seen him at Superthrift with my own eyes not too long ago, he was more real to me than ever before. That's what a random connection can do. That moment when separate things suddenly come together, like fate tapping you on the shoulder so you'll pay attention.
I should go, I said. The last thing I need right now is to be late.
A pause. Then,
you okay, Sydney?
Was I? I couldn't say for sure. After so long just paddling along,
trying to keep my head above water. I felt like the tide was turning, sweeping me along with it. The showcase was in 3 days. David Ibarra was now not only a face or a YouMe.com page, but a place, one I could get to if I chose. For so long I'd been waiting for something to happen, a change to come. Now that I could sense it getting ever closer, however, it was all I could do not to step back. It was time. Mom? My mother looked up from her desk in the war room. Yes? Can we talk for a second? Instead of responding, she shut the open folder in front of her. It was Wednesday evening, a time I'd chosen after deciding it was not too far ahead of Friday, while at the same time not the last minute. I'd also waited until after the nightly call from Peyton, when I knew I had the best chance of catching her in a good mood. Clinching the deal, both my dad and Ames were out. It was now or never. "I wanted to talk to you about Friday," I began, "and the showcase I told you about." The crease appeared between her eyebrows. Not a good sign. "Showcase? Mac and Layla's band?" "Don't panic," I told myself. "This might work in your favor." "It's an all-ages show. You said you'd think about it?" It was not good to be speaking only in questions. Confidence was key. Time to regroup. "It starts at 7, I told her, as if she'd already agreed and we were just hashing out the details. "They're second on the bill, so I'd be home by 10 at the latest." The crease deepened. I wished I hadn't noticed. "I thought we said we'd start a bit more slowly than a night at a club, Sydney." "I haven't done anything or been anywhere for weeks, Mom." She sighed, already tired of this conversation. "I just don't think it's a good idea. Why don't you call Jen and Meredith, see if they want to do something?" "It's not the same," I replied, although I knew that was exactly why she'd suggested it. "Mom, please say I can go. Please?" Already I'd arrived at the last resort of the truly desperate. Begging. Next time, I thought, no planning, no strategy. Just the fact I was already thinking of next time only confirmed the obvious. I was done here. Still, I stood there and made her say it to my face. "Honey, no," she told me. Then she gave me a sad smile, which just made it worse. "I'm sorry." And that was that. My Hail Mary. The field goal kick that could win the game, but instead went so wide you felt stupid for expecting anything different. I could have stood there and pleaded more, circled back to all the bullet points and arguments I'd compiled. But there was no use. My mom was a lot of things, but a waffler wasn't one of them. Once a no, it stayed that way. "It's okay," Mac said to me the next morning, when I told him about this at my locker before the first bell. I'd actually started crying, which was so humiliating, not to mention unattractive. "It's one show. There will be others."
"What did you do?"
I turned, and there was Layla, glaring at him.
"Nothing," Mac said.
"The girl is crying, Macaulay."
She dug in her purse, pulling out a pack of Kleenex and holding it out to me.
"You guys better not be breaking up right now. If I can't be in a happy couple, I at least need proximity to one."
"It's not him," I told her, taking a couple of tissues. "It's my mom." Just saying this set me off again, so I busied myself trying to get cleaned up. Max said,
"She said no about the showcase."
"You're crying about that?" Layla sighed. "Please, I wish someone would tell me I couldn't go. Eric's already so bossy and insufferable. It's only going to get worse. Did Mac tell you that he wants us all to meditate before the show now?
I was touched. I knew she was humoring me.
What?
Apparently, she said, leaning against the locker beside mine so we were shoulder to shoulder.
That's what serious bands do before big gigs. Meditate and visualize. He claims it will get us on the same mental plane, in spiritual harmony before we make actual harmony. I sniffled.
That sounds like a direct quote.
Of course it is. She put her head on my shoulder. You'll be missed, but it's just one stupid night. Sadly, there will probably be others. The bell rang then. Time for class. The clock was never in my favor. Max slid his arm around me, pulling me closer to him.
You going to be okay?
Yeah, I told him, reaching for his hand. He gave mine a squeeze, then held on for a beat longer before pulling away. As he walked down the hallway to his class, I started crying again.
Young love, Layla said, handing me another tissue.
I wiped my eyes, embarrassed. They were right. It was just one night, one show. But I wasn't a big crier. My emotions, so sudden and fierce, had surprised me. So much, in fact, that it wasn't until later in the day that I realized the most shocking thing of all. It wasn't that I'd broken down, but that I hadn't been alone when I did so. You only really fall apart in front of the people you know can piece you back together. Mac and Layla were there for me. Even if, and especially when, I couldn't do the same for them.
Chapter 24. Did you make plans with Jen? My mom felt bad about saying no to the showcase. Not enough to change her mind, of course. But if I'd asked for just about anything else, I had a feeling my chances were good. Too bad it was the only thing I'd wanted.
No, I replied, shutting the dishwasher. I could feel her watching me as I picked up a dish sponge and wiped down the counters. In the dining room, my father and Ames were still at the table, continuing a discussion that had begun over dinner about movement on the job-slash-housing front. When this came up, it was obvious Ames was surprised. Clearly he'd assumed that reconnecting my mom and Peyton had bought him more than just a few days. I could have told him that my parents never forgot anything. Once they brought something up, it was always still on the table, even if you chose not to see it.
Well, he'd said to them, reaching for another piece of bread, my lead at the Valley Inn didn't pan out, but I've got applications in at a few other places.
And apartments? Ames looked at my mom.
Is it a problem, my being here?
We've talked about this, my dad told him. This stay was meant to be temporary, as well as dependent on you actively seeking alternative arrangements.
There's nothing out there, Ames told him, buttering his bread. He had a lot to learn. At the very least, he should stop eating.
The job market.
It's tough right now.
My dad looked at my mom, who reached down to the empty chair beside her, and pulled out a folder, putting it on the table.
Uh-oh.
I took the liberty of examining the classifieds today. I found 6 positions you're qualified for, and too many roommate want ads to count. Ames was chewing, staring at her, as she slid the folder across to him. Finally, he swallowed.
If you guys want me out, I'm out, he said.
Silence. This was his Hail Mary.
I think that's best, my mom told him.
Peyton?
I agree.
My dad picked up his napkin and wiped his mouth.
We appreciate all you've done for us, but this is better for everyone.
I was in shock.
Funny how the world works. You don't get the something you really covet, but then the universe provides unexpected compensation.
Here, I thought you had to make a wish for it to come true.
Ames, true to form, was not going down easy. First, he tried to negotiate for another month, then a week, followed by the rest of this one. As his offers got lower and lower, it became that much harder to watch, which was why my mom and I had gone into the kitchen. My dad, however, was in his element. He could go all night, and I had a feeling he might have to.
They were still there when I went up to my room at 7:30. The showcase had started at 7, and Irv had promised me he'd message me on Hi There when they went on at 7:45, so I could watch on my phone. In the meantime, I was with them in spirit, via dueling text message exchanges with Mac and Layla. Layla. Eric just informed me that my outfit isn't meta enough. What the hell does that mean?
Not enough black? I wrote her back.
Mac.
Our sound check sucked, and everyone's fighting about clothes. Kill me now.
You'll be great, I replied to him. There was a sound out in the hallway, past my half-open door. I paused, listening. A moment later, I heard my mom moving around the war room and went back to my phone.
Lot of people here, Layla had written in the interim.
Nervous?
No.
A pause. Then,
yes.
Another beep. Mac.
Might have to smack Eric, for common good.
Try to resist, I wrote him back. Here you have a big crowd.
Showcase does, not us.
Typical, I thought. Back to Layla.
Not right without you. Wish you were here.
Beep.
Mac.
I flipped back to his screen.
Rather be at Commons Park with you.
It was dizzying, carrying on both of these conversations at once, so I was grateful that I could give them each the same answer.
Me too.
It was 7:45 when Irv sent the Hi There invite. I hit accept, and then he appeared, his face taking up the entire screen. I could barely hear him. The noise of the crowd was so loud.
They are taking the stage,
he reported, as a girl with platinum hair bumped him from behind.
How was the first band?
Awful. Basically amplified screaming. We're lucky there's anyone still here.
He shifted, letting a guy in a leather jacket pass.
Everyone's in place but Eric. Oh, here he comes. He's making his entrance through the crowd.
I lay back on my bed smiling.
Of course he is.
Some music was beginning, just a couple of chords, a bit of drumming.
Okay!
Irv yelled.
You ready?
Outside my doorway, someone was passing by, but for once, I didn't care.
Yes, I said. Show me.
I turned my phone sideways just as the picture changed. Thanks to Irv's perfect vantage point and massive reach, I could see the entire stage, as well as the first row of the crowd pressed up against it. There was Eric in his fedora, angling himself at the microphone. To his right was Ford, shuffling his big feet. And on the other side, Layla, in her cowboy boots and a red dress, hair pulled back loosely at her neck. Eric glanced at her, smiled, and began to play. Nervous for them, I touched my Saint Anything pendant, then turned up my phone volume as loud as I could. As Eric launched into the lyrics of the Logan Oxford song I knew by heart, I reached to the picture, pinching it further open, closer in. A moment to focus, and I found what I wanted. He was bent over his drums, playing hard, his hair hanging in his face. Maybe I was the only one looking closely. I'd never know. but he wasn't invisible. Not to me. There you are, I thought. There you are. Any word?
Not yet.
It was after midnight and all the bands had performed. Now it was just up to the judges and showcase sponsors to pick a winner. Meanwhile, we waited. Everyone else at the club and me in my room. I was trying to study, but couldn't focus, distracted by Mac and Layla's collective nervousness. I had never texted this much in one short period, which was really saying something, as well as the noise I kept hearing from the room next door. Not just talk radio this time, but the sound of packing. Angry packing. I hadn't realized it was happening until after their set was over. They'd played well, with Layla's song a highlight, and although the final chorus from the last number got a bit bungled, I was pretty sure nobody else noticed. Throughout, the music was loud, even through my phone speaker, as was the applause and cheering that followed it. Once Irv and I hung up, it was suddenly very quiet. That's when I heard the first thump, followed shortly after by the knock of a drawer being slammed shut. By the time the closet door slammed, my parents were outside my door. Ames is leaving in the morning, my mom told me when I opened it. We just wanted to let you know. Another bang. My dad raised his eyebrows. I said, Is everything okay?
Yes, he told me. It was a mutual decision.
The continuing racket of the next hour said otherwise. Every drawer opened was closed with emphasis, the closet door rattling its frame after each use. It was concerning enough that, in the sudden quiet during one of Ames's smoke breaks, I went over, poking the door open and peering in. I glanced over my shoulder, then went to the bed, where a row of boxes sat waiting. One was filled with books, paperback novels, and a couple of titles about recovery and addiction. Another held some linens and towels, a few balled-up socks. The last was odds and ends, coffee cups, lighters, charging cords. In one corner was tucked a stack of pictures. The one on top was of him and Peyton, standing on a sandy beach, probably during their Jacksonville trip. They had their arms around each other's shoulders and were smiling. I flipped to the next. My brother again, this time at our kitchen table, a coffee drink at his elbow. He had one eyebrow raised, half annoyed, waiting for the shutter to click. A shot of Ames and Marla standing in front of a Christmas tree. The last, at the bottom, was from Peyton's graduation dinner at Luna Blue. I remembered my mom handing the waitress her phone so we could all be in it. My brother was in the middle in a crisp white shirt, my parents on either side of him. I was next to my mom, with Ames beside me, Marla on his other side. We were all smiling, the twinkling lights above us blurring as the flash popped. Distantly, I heard my phone beep. I dropped the picture back into the box with the others, then went back to my room where I walked over to my bed to see if the text I'd gotten was the one I'd been waiting for, about the showcase outcome. It wasn't. On way to hospital. This time, Mac had written for both of them. My mom. It's bad. There's a lot you can do with a phone. Send a message or a picture. Get the weather, news, or horoscope. See and talk to someone in real time. Play games. Pay for parking. One thing technology still hadn't mastered, though, was the actual act of being there. I'd been all right with settling for distance with the showcase. But not this. It didn't even occur to me to ask permission to go to the hospital. It was well past midnight, and I'd had enough negative responses to more reasonable requests. Instead, in those panicked minutes, after getting that three-sentence text, I put my phone aside, sat down at my desk, and wrote a note. I wasn't kidding myself.